You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm in a good mood.
And Devin, how be you?
I don't know, guys. I'm just... I'm feeling like I'm having a hard time connecting today.
Oh, you just took a shot. That was a shot at me.
Nobody knows what that means.
Nobody knows the last half hour we've been doing to connect this call. And also, we're excited to have a guest join us and introduce a guest. JP, how are you?
Hi, guys. I am excited to be with you today. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited for this too. For those who don't know, JP is out on Twitter. JP, start off by telling your Twitter handle, because not a lot of people. I mean, some people probably know who you are, and some folks don't. Let's put it out there so they can follow you if they don't already.
Well, my name's JP Priggy, but I go by the nickname Chippy. So, my Twitter handle is at Courtside Chip.
Chip, as in C-H-I-P, as in P as in Peter,
C-H-I-P.
Right?
C-H-I-P.
Yep.
Yep, Courtside, and then Chip, like Chip off the old block.
Sweet. All right, guys, I got to tell you, I've been following JP, and we've been interacting for a few years. She's also been, you've been listening to our show since back in the day, too, right? I mean, you've been around for a bit.
Yeah.
And she's got an interesting story that I want to give her a chance to share before we get into talking basketball. JP, I met you at a basketball game earlier this season. It was the Milwaukee Bucks game. I was so happy to finally meet you, but why don't you tell everybody where you're from? Cause you live in Utah now, but you haven't always lived in Utah.
Right. I'm a card carrying Wisconsinite. I'm straight out of Sheboygan. That's where I'm from. And, I did move to Utah about 2 years ago, but I grew up in Wisconsin. And I grew up, I've got a bit of a history in radio. And so I grew up in Wisconsin as a Bucks fan until about, or I shouldn't say until. And then in 1992, I saw the Tournament of the Americas and John Sacramento Malone. And that sort of changed my direction in life, in life and what I was planning on doing. And shortly after that, I started doing color commentary in high school because I lived and breathed basketball. It was probably the only 14-year-old girl with Utah Jazz bedspreads that side of the Mississippi. I mean, literally, it was everything Utah Jazz, and I videotaped everything, and the tears were real. And so I did color commentary in high school, and then in college I got a broadcast scholarship to do color commentary in Chicago. And after college, I went overseas and did some Euroball coverage. And it was about 5 years ago that I came back to the States because my sister was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. And unfortunately, about 2 years ago, she passed. So 5 years ago when she was diagnosed, I stopped doing media. I decided to spend my time with my family, and if that's what needed to be done, and that's what I did. And so, you know, two and a half years ago, when we knew, you know, the time was coming for her, I said, well, I am going to do what I do best, and that's I'm going to go skiing, and I'm going to I've been a ski coach for, you know, 10 plus years. I just have to be kind of good at it. I don't have the same passion for it as I do basketball. But so then I came here, and I've been coaching, and I've gone to as many Jazz games as possible. I mean, when I was back in Milwaukee, I'd see 20 plus Jazz games a year, or Bucks games a year, pardon me. So, I mean, I'm in and out of basketball gyms all the time anyway. But when I came here to Utah, and yes, I'm not a Mormon, and I found a great little Catholic church right near me. I sort of live sort of close to downtown, and I started coaching their basketball team, their seventh and eighth grade girls basketball team. And it has been one of the greatest rewards I've ever had. Our eighth grade girls last year won the CYO championship.
Sweet.
So let's go, Lady Lancers.
So
it's been so rewarding. And right now we're working on getting ready for the Jazz 3-on-3 tournament, which is on July 1st.
Yep, that's coming up soon.
We've got a couple teams. Yeah, and we've got some teams put together, and it's just I didn't know that my course would change in terms of, you know, media, and it would shift to coaching and then basketball coaching. But I think it's the best decision I've ever made, you know, just changing from ski coaching, just because that's what I had done, to basketball, which is a game that I can turn inside out and talk about and breathe. And just because, as we all probably know, we probably know the game better than we can play the game. And for me, that's been the case. It's been the case. And so these last couple of years as a Jazz fan, but as a Bucks fan, has been such an evolution for me. I really appreciate you guys recognizing that, and me just sort of being an odd duck in Utah, but coming from a place that doesn't have a beautiful basketball pedigree in the last, you know, even 20 years, but that's all changing in Milwaukee.
Well,
and that story, if you guys don't know that Bucks story, is pretty fascinating as well.
So, like, this is way cool. And I was telling these guys I was going to have you on. And how about that for an introduction? Like, we just got some nice history for me. And that's fantastic, right? The fact that you're a dual Bucks, dual Jazz fan. It's funny, too, that you bring up Stockton, because I know a few people who... I met somebody in Brooklyn, you know, that I've followed for years too, who has been a Jazz fan because of John Stockton. They live out there near the Knicks. They live out there near the Nets, but yet they love the Jazz more than anything because of John Stockton. And I think it's kind of cool. But in case everybody didn't hear that, she just went through some years of basketball knowledge. So We're gonna talk playoffs today, right, John? I know we gotta hit playoffs. I know we've got to, and JP's got some thoughts to throw into this as well. I'm glad you're here, JP. So we're gonna kick off with some playoff talk. John, where do you want to start?
Let's start in the West. The Warriors barely managed to hold off the Blazers to go ahead and win Game 2 as well.
Barely.
They just go ahead and sit Kevin Durant the rest of the series.
they barely pulled it off last night. I like the way Mike Breen put it at the end. They survived because the Trailblazers gave them their best.
Yeah.
Have we seen the best that the Trailblazers can bring this series, or can we expect them to win a game in this series?
You know, that felt to me like Game 3 of the Rockets-Jazz, where the Jazz lost, but they were really, really close. And so I do think the Blazers are going to get a win next two are at home. So I would think they would get at least one of those. Just depends on when Durant's coming back.
JP, what do you think? Are they going to get a win?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I absolutely think so. Because they made... I mean, and I like the way that Damian Lillard is saying, like, it's game by game. And when someone asks, like, well, could this be your last game at Oracle? He's like, no, we're planning on coming back here. And that's that winner's mentality, but also trying to say, okay, but we have to take it game by game. And there were a lot of mistakes in yesterday's game, not as many as game one, but just small technical issues. Remember, even a guy like Myers Leonard allowed for a few mistakes that changed the course of the game. Farouk Aminu could have made a few, you know, he could have sunk one of those three-pointers in the last series. He was better. There are a few games where it really highlighted his three-point ability. And I think that's going to show in Portland. I think that they are going to get a game, if not maybe two games in Portland, but they're not going to win this series.
That's bold that you say two games. I kind of hope they do, but I don't know. I think they get one, but You know, and I'm glad you brought up Miles Leonard and brought up the little things, because how many times did Miles get caught fouling Steph Curry on a three-pointer last night? Right?
Well, he was out of position. He was totally out of position. Like, we want to jump on Enos Kanter for being 2 feet out of position.
Yeah.
Myers Leonard is running around like he doesn't know where he belongs in a set.
And you can't do that against a great like Steph, because Steph's going to get you. He's going to get you jumping, and he's going to get you in the situation. And Steph, John, I forgot how many times, but I can count at least two, if not three times, that Steph went to the free throw line for three free throws after getting fouled on a three-point shot.
Yep. And well,
he had 11 free throws.
I'm sorry, JP, what was that?
It's a testament to also like how they are able to manipulate a mismatch.
Agreed.
Just with a simple switch. That's all it took. That's all it took. It took a small switch.
I agree. All right. So, John, I know we usually pick the winners of the series when they kick off. So, John, give me your short answer. Who wins this series and how many games?
Warriors in five.
Okay. JP?
Just because I'm an eternal optimist, I say Warriors in six.
Okay. I'm going with John on this one, Warriors in five. Although I lean closer to you, JP, because I think that Portland has the firepower to get two games in this series. McCollum showed that in the last series, and he's been Mr. Steady for them. But that's the thing. They're going to have to be able to score and outscore the Warriors in a couple of games. So, all right, moving on to – let's jump over to the East. This is where it's at, right? I mean, you got the Bucks and the Raptors – where are we at right now? Is it tied 1-1? Or no, it's up there. Bucks are up 1-0, aren't they?
No.
Bucks are up 1. And I think a lot of people were surprised by the Raptors' inability to close out that game.
So, okay. John, and John, I'm going to go to you first and then JP, but I watched that game. I had it on at work, and here's the problem with working swing shift is I miss these games. So I put the phone up, prop it up. I'll turn on the game and I'll watch it while I'm working on stuff. So I caught bits and pieces, but early on the Raptors really, they punched first and they punched big. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, the Bucks are on their heels and maybe not, but down the stretch in that game, the guy who stood out to me was Middleton's defense. He swarmed at the end of that game and his defense was critical in the Bucks turnaround to be able to pull that game out. What did you see, John, in that game?
I saw Raptors not being able to hit their threes down the stretch. You think of Kyle Lowry was 7 of 9, but the rest of the team was 8 of 33 from three.
Ouch.
And you need to have a more measured attack against a team like the Bucks. And so if those outside shots aren't falling, Milwaukee's pretty good at containing the inside game. So, you know, that's, I think, the main thing the Raptors have to work on and worry about is, you know, our outside shots have to fall if we're going to be able to beat the Bucks.
Absolutely. And the Bucks are, if I remember correctly, we talked about this, the Bucks are the number one defense in the NBA and it shows. And like I said, the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game, the Bucks defense tightened their grip big time, but you're right. The Raptors missed some big time shots they should have hit. And it's interesting that so goes Lowry, so go the Raptors. I mean, I know in game 7, it was Leonard who hit the big shot, but Lowry seems to be the motor for that Raptors team, and if he's not playing well, they struggle. JP, what did you see in that first game?
I think Middleton, though. I mean, that's to be expected by Chris Middleton. That's what the sort of I wouldn't call him necessarily the leader, but he's a silent leader. Chris Middleton and Giannis have been together and they determine the course of that team. Chris Middleton can will that team into a victory, just like we sort of saw with Brooke Lopez, just really turning it on and sort of willing that team to their first to that first game one victory. But that's nothing to be surprised at by Chris Middleton, and the way he does it is so understated, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he's tricky, because some guys, you know, if he's quiet for a while, you think you can sleep on him maybe for a little bit. But no, I mean, that guy's deadly. Chris Middleton is my MVP for the Bucks.
Really?
Because when he's not injured, he is the most consistent Buck. When he's not injured, he's the most consistent Buck.
Wow.
And the way we pay, I mean, he's way underpaid, and I love that. I love a deal. he was making 13, 14, and he's making 15 this year. I mean, come on, Chris Middleton.
So
he's my favorite Buck.
So he's come up in talks before. John, we've even mentioned him. I don't know where his contract situation is, but he's come up in conversation, I should say, among Jazz fans about bringing him to come play on the Jazz. I mean, you know, is that a possibility ever? And would either of you be opposed to that idea of him playing on the Jazz?
Middleton is a player option, so he'll be a free agent. And I think a lot of people are going to be offering him near max, if not max money.
I think so, too.
I think so, too, but he's staying with Giannis. He's staying in Milwaukee. He's happy. This is the first place, you know, he wasn't treated all that well in Detroit. And that was sort of a dumpster fire at times of a team as well. And I think he's happy. He believes there's a home for him in Milwaukee for the next few years. You know, I can't speak to the future, but any team would be lucky to have a guy like Chris Middleton. I think his style would also fit really well in Utah, because he's not all flash. He put his head down and work hard. And that's, I think, what, you know, the Jazz have sort of built their legacy on, guys like that.
But what you both mentioned, that he's in line for a max, not sure the Jazz can afford him. And you're right. He might have to stay with Milwaukee at that rate. I'm not sure Milwaukee can afford him though. Can they?
Yeah, but
they're about to lose what?
Yeah, they're going to.
They waived George Hill.
Oh, I gotcha.
And I don't think they can keep Mirotić either if they're moving some other pieces around. I mean, this is going to be a different team next year. I mean, they got Lopez for 2.5 this year. I mean, the guy's going to, this team, you know, all teams change, but
right.
Losing a guy like George Hill, I think, John, you said, is going to be a bigger impact on the team than maybe we expect. Because John and I were talking about before the break, just, you know, how important veteran presence is. And, I think a guy like George Hill, even though he brought in zero, I think he had 0 points or just a few points, he had 4 steals in game one. And, well, and guys like that really determine your team.
Well, and you mentioned his veteran presence. I mean, the fact that we've talked to Jazz, look no further than what the presence was he brought to this Jazz team 2 years ago when it was a young Gordon Hayward, had not been to, you know, had been to the playoffs, I think, once before. But you had a very young team that was entering the playoffs and going to face the Clippers. And although George Hill wasn't entirely healthy, he was a veteran presence. He was that presence that helped, I think, the young guys like Gordon and Rudy get over the hump to be able to handle the playoff pressure and atmosphere. Agreed?
I would agree with that.
It was great.
Maturity, right, guys? It's just maturity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so let's pick this series. John, how many games and who?
I'm gonna go Bucks in 7.
Okay. JP?
You go first, Alan. I'm last. I still am in total shock that the Bucks are where they are right now, just because of Ben with it. You know, I'm not shocked, but seeing even the evolution of the Bucks in 5 years, this is everyone is pinching themselves.
Okay, I'm gonna say Bucks in 6 then.
Bucks and 6. I think I'm going to go Bucks and 6. I'm going to go Bucks and 6, but still there's like this part of me, this little Wisconsin girl that thinks this is a fluke. This can't be our year.
No.
It just has You know, there, and I am an optimist, and you know, I've been fear of the deer more than anyone else. you know, and it's, see these people, you have thousands and thousands and thousands of people outside of Five Star Forum, and it was like, where were you 5 years ago? They couldn't even sell out a Warriors game 3 years ago, and now this is, you know, these turn of events. But something in me just has to say. I don't know if I have to say it, but something in me just says, I don't know if this is our year. Like, I just don't know if this is our year. And maybe it's because if it is our year, we're going to go up against the Warriors. And that could be that Mack truck.
And very,
that it's not our year.
And very likely a Warriors team that'll have Kevin Durant back too. So, yeah. But no, I think it is the Bucks' year to get to the finals. I don't know how they'll match up against the Warriors. Although John and I were talking about this last week, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we both felt like that the Bucks have enough. Either the Bucks or the Raptors have enough to take it to the Warriors and have a legitimate shot, don't they?
I think they do. I mean, I think the Raptors overcame what they did. The Bucks have been, at first we thought it was overachieving, but they've proven that they're for real this year. And I think the Warriors are just kind of like, they're on a shaky foundation. Yes, they have miles more talent than any other NBA team, but this just feels like a perfect storm is gathering for the finals.
Yeah, I love the way you put that, a perfect storm. And I agree. JP, I don't think, don't call it a fluke yet, because I think the Bucks are for real. And I think, and Giannis is for real too. And I think that finals is going to be a much more evenly matched series than we're given credit. And of course we're getting way ahead of ourselves, because we're not to the end of the Eastern Conference Finals or Western Conference Finals yet. But assuming the Bucks get there, they're for real, guys. They're for real. And so is Toronto. Like, Toronto has one legit star in Kawhi Leonard and an upcoming star. I think Siakam's going to be an upcoming star, star in this league. But Milwaukee is so, so defensively sound and so sound across the board, and they're well coached. Budenholzer's great. Budenholzer's phenomenal.
Well, I mean, he's coach of the year for a reason, and likely, you know, two-time coach of the year for a reason. And I don't mean to call the Bucks a fluke, because the way that team functions, the way they move the ball, we talk about their defense. I think there's something to be said about the Bucks offense and how they can create these open spaces with swinging the ball around the perimeter. They do, because teams close out the paint so much that they don't have that as much of an option. You know, and so the way they're moving the ball around is not as much on the inside.
No.
And so that's to their testament too, because that's lessened their options for areas where the ball can move.
And
the Bucks are for real. The Bucks are for real. But there's something in this Wisconsin girl that says, how can this be happening? You know what I mean? And I've watched it.
Yeah.
Told people about it, and the fear of the deer is real. But now that you know, you ever feel like you've worked so hard? I haven't worked hard for it. I mean, I've worked hard as a fan, but you work so hard for something, and you're at the precipice, and you're like, "Am I here? Like, are my feet on the ground here? Like, is this reality?"
John, we've been there before. 1997, Stockton, the shot.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're going.
Yeah.
The Jazz are for real. They're going to the finals. Can this really be happening? And then the daunting task of Michael Jordan, right, John? Did we not feel this way back then?
See, that I worry about teams like the Bucks and the Raptors experiencing what the Utah Jazz were in the 90s, where you just have this incredible team, but you're going against, you know, the Steph Curry Warriors or the Michael Jordan Bulls or just these other teams that just happen to be so much better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Well, it's the pieces come together. Yeah.
Well, and back then you had a Jazz team that again was that perfect storm for 2 years in a row and was one of the top defensive teams in the NBA. In fact, the Bulls and the Jazz were two of the best defensive teams in the NBA at the time. and they met up both years. And no, it's right back to that same comment of perfect storm that you brought up. So JP, what you're feeling is real. We've been there as Jazz fans here in Salt Lake. We've been there, and you were there along for the ride back then too. I mean, you saw it, yeah. you saw it on the wall. You thought, oh, it's magical. We're so good. It's great. And then it's like, it's Michael Jordan. Ah, it's Michael Jordan.
Yeah. You know, I started to become a Jazz fan, and I think I didn't have that same history that the Utah fans had with Jazz coming in 79, and then Miller buying the team, and then, you know, I wasn't there for the drafting of John Stockton and Karl Malone and the acquisition of Hornacek, and you know, I wasn't there for all that. And so, you know, becoming a fan, you know, four plus years before, you know, the Jazz get to the finals, I guess I didn't see the struggles as the same way, or, you know, as difficult to overcome. But also as a younger fan, you know, I'm living in the Midwest, and everyone, it's all about the Bulls. It's all about the Bulls. And sometimes you ever get that mentality of like, nope, everyone likes this, I'm going to like the other. Yeah. And that wasn't the reason I fell in love with that. But that reasoning, I went, nope, everyone's picking the Bulls. Don't sleep on the Jazz. Like, the Jazz are real just because they're not in Chicago. I've lived in Chicago, and people in Chicago think that Chicago is the world starts and ends in Chicago. It's just a Chicago thing, you know? And I think you're probably right. I felt that, but I didn't feel it in the same way I'm feeling it right now.
Right.
Because I think, you know, this has been my lifetime.
Yep. Nope. We get you. That was what I was getting at, though. We get you. We totally get you. So rest assured, the dream's gonna be all right. And if they can keep it together, then next year is gonna be another strong year for them. So, I'm excited. I've been enjoying basketball so far in these playoffs. I mean, even with the Jazz out, this has been fun to watch. So, all right. Any other NBA news you want to touch on, John? Is there anything else we're missing? I'm trying to think if there was anything that happened this last week.
I think we're good for the playoffs, but one thing that happened is the NBA draft order got selected.
Yes. Give us the top set of picks. Trying to remember the order.
The sign the NBA is not picked. Because the two smallest markets got the top two picks. So the number one pick is New Orleans Pelicans, and the number two pick is the Memphis Grizzlies. And then
John,
from there, it was the Knicks. Yeah?
Can I ask you about this? You just mentioned the two smallest teams. I mean, I think that this is a consensus sort of around the league. It's not a matter of expansion. Which teams are the most or the least stable in their market? And I think the top two the teams that got one and two, the Pels and the Grizz, are two of the teams that are that are probably the most or the least stable in their respective market.
I would agree.
That was fascinating.
So
yeah, we've seen in the past that market stability doesn't really matter. I mean, Seattle seemed pretty stable, and they got the number two pick, and they left anyway.
Yeah, right. So, I was surprised, but like you said, John, it's the whole idea that the NBA is not fixed. And I loved Rudy's tweet that night about it, about the fact that, hey, bye-bye tanking, people, you know. See ya, tankers. I don't even remember his exact words, but he called out the tanking.
Pretty much, although when you consider how the Pelicans sat Anthony Davis and the Grizzlies sat Mike Conley and the Lakers sat LeBron James.
Yeah.
And the Knicks are the Knicks. I mean, thinking still kind of worked out, just not for Phoenix or Cleveland or any of those teams. The thing I was amused by is this is the first year where the fourth pick was part of the lottery and the Lakers get it. The Lakers have done well as far as bouncing balls. You know, they got Ingram at three, they got Lonzo at two, and now they're going to have the number four pick this year when they were lined up to, I think they were like 10th in the order before the lottery started. So
Kuzma.
Worked out again.
The magic of Kuzma.
What were you going to say, Dev?
Kuzma, well, he's 24th or 5th pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he's there repping them, and I think that you know, that had something to do. And if he has a 24th pick, I'll take Kyle Kuzma as a 24th pick any day.
Absolutely.
Any day, every day. That's true.
Here's the thing, John. Is you say that this puts an end to the conspiracies that the NBA is fixed. Could the NBA not be throwing a few picks to throw people off the scent here?
Oh, so you're saying this was intentional?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Everyone thinks the Knicks are going to get the pick, or, oh, we're going to give it to Atlanta. They go, no. Anthony Davis is clearly out of New Orleans, so we need to try and make them competitive. They're not supposed to get it. Oh, the Lakers, we're going to bump them down a little bit, but help them out somewhat. Until they're bouncing the ping pong balls in front of my face, and I've had a chance to inspect
them. You don't believe a word of it.
I don't believe it.
Uh-huh. John, what do you think?
I think it's been proven time and time again the NBA draft lottery is not fixed, other than maybe the cold envelope from the Knicks 30-something years ago. on the account, I tweeted out what all the draft pick, the number one pick. I'll just actually pull it up.
Yeah, I saw that.
When you look at these teams and you think about it, is there a conspiracy? Because Cleveland got the number one pick 4 times in 11 years.
Yes.
And granted, one of them was LeBron James, but did they really deserve it? No, it's luck. I mean, New Orleans has got the number one pick twice within the past, this is the second time in 8 years.
Okay, but...
Because number one pick. Okay, I'll go in order. New Orleans from this year to last year. So New Orleans got the number one pick this year. Last year it was Phoenix. The year before it was Boston. Then Philadelphia, then Minnesota, then Cleveland, then Cleveland, then New Orleans, then Cleveland, then Washington, then the Clippers, then the Bulls, then the Blazers, then the Raptors, then the Bucks, then the Magic, then Cleveland again, then Houston, then Washington. And one thing I noticed going through those is, you know, when you look at market size of those teams, there's a lot of variety there. There's a lot of variety on teams you wouldn't necessarily think the NBA wants to load up with number one talent that got a lot of it anyway. And the vast majority of them, that got the number one pick, they did not win a championship with them.
Here's your conspiracy.
You
here's
LeBron
your
coming back.
Here's your conspiracy,
right,
John. So Devin brings up a point, makes me think. Here's your conspiracy. Guess who the NBA exec that has the most top picks over the last 15 years is?
Danny Ainge.
No,
it's Dan Gilbert, isn't it?
David Griffin.
Dan Gilbert.
David Griffin, yeah.
he was with Cleveland, and now he's with the Pelicans. There's your conspiracy right there. Let's reward David Griffin.
Jazz needs to hire Griffin as an advisor next time they're on the lottery. Here's a flat $1 million to be our advisor for the next 6 weeks.
Right? Okay, so I want to bring up a point here about this draft lottery real quick, too. Number one and number two, I kind of like the picks, actually. I think it's good for both Memphis and for New Orleans. The question's been brought up.
I don't, because they're both in the West.
I know. Well, okay, but the question's been brought up. Does this keep Anthony Davis in New Orleans? And I have some thoughts on this. And also, before I get to that, though, Memphis Grizzlies. I like that pick for the Grizzlies, not so much because they're in the West. You're right. That's horrible. But the Grizzlies have a very young core that I like. We've talked enough on here how much I love Jaren Jackson Jr. I love his play. I think he fits well.
Love him.
Huh?
Love that kid.
Yes. Yeah. He's amazing. So now you're gonna add another young pick to that core. You've got Mike Conley there who's mentoring that young core. If he sticks around, Devin's shaking his head because he thinks he's gone. And you know what? There might be some truth to that. But again, Memphis has a young core and can start the rebuild process. And I think they're going to be a very good team in years to come. But then you go to Pelicans. Can you mend that relationship? I'm not sure you can. Everybody says, well, maybe Davis stays now. But you have a bunch of teammates there that had given up, had moved on. They'd played without him. They said, you know what? You're not going to give us your best. We're going to move on without you. I'm not sure that relationship is repairable. I think there's going to be upheaval down there in New Orleans. And as we read on ESPN the other day, is Zion Williamson a secure pick at that pick? Because now he's talking, there's rumors that he might stay at Duke for another year. What do you think?
Now, here's what I think is going to happen. I think Zion goes ahead and goes to New Orleans. I think the Pelicans do trade Davis. I think the relationship is over, but now they feel a lot better about trading Davis because they have Zion. So the way this fell, it makes a lot of trade options more attractive. You know, Lakers and Pelicans, they're offering all kinds of stuff, but now that it's the number four pick, the Lakers package looks a lot more attractive for Anthony Davis. Other teams, I think, are going to be able to get in there. Boston is still in decent shape to get Davis. Not as good as they were before the lottery order went, but they can still, you know, they probably do still have to offer Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and probably the number 14 pick and other things to get it to work. I think as far as the Grizzlies go, I do think Conley's out of there. I think you get Ja Morant, you're going to want to go ahead and trade Conley and get other pieces that you can put around him, and you start finishing the rebuild. They got rid of Marc Gasol. Mike Conley's the other piece. You go ahead and trade him for more assets, and then you have Jaren Jackson Jr., you have Ja Morant, you put your other pieces around him, and you grow that team.
Is Morant?
The Pelicans and the Grizzlies are in the exact same spot. Trade away the stars you have, build your young core, and then you're going to be really good in 2 or 3 years.
Is Morant their guy at 2, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think Zion's the consensus number one. I think Morant's the consensus number two.
And I think the consensus is, and I think especially from, you know, just the Jazz fans who really, 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 really speculate about who's coming where. I mean, I'm surprised that on Pioneer Day, we're not going to be through, you know, there's not a Mike Conley float in a parade, you know, at Pioneer Day, because people want Mike Conley here. And I'm saying, you know, I don't necessarily think that he is worth his weight. I mean, he was vastly overpaid, not to his, you know, for his ability, but for his body. His body has proven it can't hold up.
He's on the decline.
Why do we need that? Why do we need that here?
Right. He's on the decline, and I'm in agreement with you. I'm glad somebody else, and I think John, you were in agreement. We've talked about this before. Conley's on the decline, body wise, health wise. He's on the decline, and he's overpaid. I don't know that the Jazz want to pay that money for a guy who's on the decline.
No, he might be a good fit. I mean, I think he's a darn good fit, but he's a fit only so long as his ability to play.
He has 2 more years left, right?
Yes.
I think that's at the point that I do think they'll probably try to trade for him again. But that 2 years is exactly how long you're going to want him for. You're going to want an upgrade at point guard. You need someone who can shoot from the outside. Conley, he's probably the best player in the NBA who's never made an All-Star game active right now.
Right.
So, you know, we would have loved Conley in the playoffs. The Jazz would not have been out 5 games if they had made that midseason trade, I think.
It depends on who they would have given up, though, John.
Well, it would have been Rubio and Exum.
Okay.
And I think you can say, I think it would have been a much different first-round series if it had been Conley instead.
Right.
So I do think they look at him as an upgrade there. I think, he's getting older and he's probably slowing down a bit and he won't be as good in the final year as he will be next year. But I think they're looking at it as worth it. I think they're looking at it as just the right amount in the window to get him, have him for 2 years. And then at the end of the 2 years, he's going to be 34 or something. And then they go ahead and move on to their next one.
But at 30 mil a year?
That's what they're looking at.
Or 20 mil or whatever it is a year?
It's a lot, but they have the space.
Okay.
I think that there's something to be said about the Jazz and how they make their decisions and how they have that steady hand. For as much as the fans want it, I just don't know if the Jazz organization is just because they have the money doesn't mean they're going to spend it.
Right.
I think that's sort of been proven, right? I mean, this organization has sort of proven that, they've got the money, but that doesn't mean for the long term that they want to spend it or if they think, you know, it's worth its weight. Right. But what I do love about the Jazz organization is we know, okay, in 2 years, whatever may happen, there's still going to be a lot of similarities within the front office. I think we can put our money down that I think Quinn Snyder is going to be with us. And there's something to be said about a team that has consistency, that can draw in free agents.
Right.
That, you know, maybe the people don't want to recognize about the Jazz, but I think that consistency really, 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 really bodes well for the team. But then again, we can get guys and it's like they don't sign Utah. So.
Right. And you brought up a point, John. Let's transition one more piece of NBA news that we haven't talked about. Jazz front office moves.
Oh, yeah.
Jazz promote.
I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how much different that's going to be. But, yeah, they promote Dennis Lindsay and they give Justin Zanuck the title of GM now. It felt like it was going to be coming for a long time. I don't know how much different that's going to make things. But
I don't think it will.
They know they're not going to lose Zanuck somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't think it will change anything. I think we'll still see. I mean, Justin's already involved in the situation a lot. I think his involvement will continue and probably increase. But I think that's the only part that's really going to change, because I think Dennis Lindsay's still going to continue in the capacity he has and doing the things that I just don't think we're going to see much of a change. No, but that is the one big piece of news this week on the Jazz front. So, and real quick too, I believe we have dates on the summer league, right? Do we? Devin, you went and tried to buy tickets and you had troubles doing so.
The first date is the first.
Okay. Yeah, Devin, did you ever get your tickets? You had troubles the other day trying to get them.
No, I did not get my tickets. I have gone to every single game of Summer League since they kicked it back up. Went to buy tickets. I was a few minutes late, and so I found some. They were decent seats, but when I went to buy, I could not get in because I did not know my password, and the password reset would not work, and I just gave up and said a lot of bad words. So I won't be attending Summer League this year.
If you remember in the past, it was like the second, third, and the fifth. What's nice about this year is it's the first, the second, and the third.
Yeah.
Boom. Three and six, boom. Then you got 4th of July, and then you're shifting over to Vegas.
Yep.
And I like that a lot. I like that the ability, their decision. Sometimes it's just the dates, but I'm excited. I think Jazz Summer League, for people who haven't been there before, talk about bang for your buck.
Absolutely.
Getting there. And it's just, and you see who don't like preseason. Come on. This is, you see these guys develop before your eyes.
Absolutely.
Well, here's the big thing about this. I don't think it really matters that the Jazz are participating. The thing people are going to want to see is that number two pick. Ja Morant should be playing here because Grizzlies are participating this season again. You also have the Cavs, who have a lottery pick, and the Spurs, who always seem to put together a decent roster with some familiar names. So,
right.
Should be a fun time for those who are going. I'm just not one of them.
I'm not going to let you we'll stop it there, Devin. So you don't have to say choice words here.
I'm just going to say this. We've been covering the Jazz for 5 years now.
5 years.
If they want to give me a media table, I'm fine with that. I'll tweet. I'll do whatever you want. I'm just throwing it out there. Jedi and Germs is available to attend Summer League as part of the media coverage.
And you're throwing, you know, like something to lure people to the table. You know, you'll have little antibacterial gel, Jedi and Germs. It'll be perfect. It'll be a perfect. Let me ask you this though. Let me ask you about this with the Kokoskov firing, and there's something to be said about Phoenix and that front office and Sarver and ugh. But what do you think becomes of him, Kokoskov?
John, you can answer this better than me.
Where
Igor, I'm sure he gets an assistant coach position somewhere else, and I think he will eventually get another chance because I think people look at Phoenix as such a mess that there really wasn't much he was going to be able to do. I think how much success Monty has in his first year will color what people think of Igor. Say if Monty goes in and Phoenix wins 35 games, then maybe they'll go, wow, maybe Igor wasn't that great.
Yeah, but I mean, look what happened to Hornacek. He did kind of get, he got the short end of the stick there, but then he chose to go to another organization that wasn't necessarily stable in the Knicks. And I also felt a little bit like, I don't have anything bad to say about Jeff Hornacek, but I felt like it was a little bit of a traitor move to go work for Phil Jackson. But that being said, I mean, where's Jeff Hornacek now? Right. And I just I think that Phoenix can be a bit of a trap for coaches and a hole that it takes a while to crawl out of.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jeff's mistake in going to New York was not only was it New York under Phil Jackson, but he had to have Kurt Rambis as his assistant head coach in order to get the job. And that was a disaster. And Rambis undermined him the whole time. And it was just terrible. And that's why I was shocked when the Lakers job came along and they got Frank Vogel, and Frank Vogel is making Jason Kidd his first assistant. And it's like, okay, that is Caesar hiring Brutus. It's like, you know what's going to happen. The Lakers are going to underperform. Vogel's going to get blamed. Kidd's going to help in the whispering campaign. Kidd's going to stab him in the back, and then he'll be the Lakers coach.
Right, but
you can see it right now.
But as a Bucks fan, here's something I'm going to advise any organization against. Jason Kidd, in any sort of decision-making, any sort of coaching position. I mean, as far back as Brooklyn, they said the guy doesn't really practice. I mean, Jason, he couldn't even say Wisconsin properly. He kept saying Wisconsin. We're not going to accept you if you can't even say or speak properly. Jason Kidd should not be a coach in the NBA.
I'm just
point blank. Period.
I'm just here for the slapping of the cup. Here, hold my beer, Jason Kidd.
You know, here's what I'm here for. Because John lays this out, and I think that's exactly how it's going to go down.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's going to make the best Game of Zones episode ever.
Oh.
Because it's just perfect. It has to happen that way. I don't see any way that it goes. And you're absolutely right, Chip. He doesn't belong in the NBA. And I think that's why there was some reluctance on Ty Lue's part about taking that job, saying, no, I'm not going to take less years and have you force a guy onto my staff who's going to try to stab me in the back. I'm not doing it. And good on him for it.
And here's the way I've seen it in the NBA over the years. Head coaches are great, and we've always talked about certain head coaches that are just fantastic. Head coaches, I still believe, are as good as their assistants. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And you look at some of the best head coaches that the NBA has seen. They've had assistants behind them. I mean, even Phil Jackson, for all the talk everybody talks about him, who did he have along for the ride in every single one of his championship runs that provided that knowledge on the baseline on the sideline as an assistant coach? Tex Winter, right? Tex was his go-to guy. You go to Quinn here in Salt Lake. He's had a good group of guys that have been behind him. Alex Jensen, Igor Kokoschkov last year. You go down to Pop in San Antonio. He's had a good. You look around the NBA. Assistants are the guys who help make that motor run.
But guys, this, and you had mentioned that Kurt Rambis in New York. That's going to be as much of an issue as it was in New York right now in L.A.
Absolutely.
Kurt Rambis has a lot to do and a lot to say with that organization. But also, I just wanted to be said, I don't necessarily know if they made that offer to Ty Lue as a real offer or they did it to placate LeBron.
Maybe.
I don't know if that was the big deal.
That's a good point. That maybe that was LeBron's guy.
They obviously didn't believe in him because they wouldn't do the five-year deal.
Right.
And they did give the 5 years to Did they give 5 years to Vogel?
I can't remember. No,
I don't believe so. I think they gave him the three.
No, was Vogel 3 years? Okay.
So.
Well, either way, they said, okay, yeah, LeBron, we'll offer you a deal, but it was a deal, but nonetheless, it wasn't really a deal that he was going to accept.
Right.
You know, and so I say, they can go back and say, LeBron, we offered it to your guy. He just didn't take it.
Right. All right. I think that's enough NBA today. We've talked for quite a while. Do we want to let's move on from the NBA to Devin's quick hits? Devin, you got some hits for us this week?
We're gonna talk NBA. I'm sorry, but that's what I want to do. I want to talk about that Kawhi game winner. That was, I believe, the first ever game seven buzzer beater in NBA history. Where does that rank for you guys in terms of a buzzer beating shot? Because for me, that may be the most exciting shot I've ever seen, taking away the bias of the shot by Stockton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
John, where does it rank?
Definitely up there. If we take away Jazz games, that's probably the best one. I mean, I know there's the famous one with Jordan cutting to the middle and hitting his shot at the buzzer or right before the buzzer. But I saw that live, and I'm so glad that I did, that I flipped on the fourth quarter of that game. And, jumping over there, it looks like a prayer shot, bouncing around the rim four times, everyone holding their breath. It was just an incredible moment.
JP, where does it rank for you?
It ranks up there. I think you guys are right. Just being a Jazz fan, John Stockton is number one. Just from a long shot, we're not talking about just, a last minute play or a lob or something like that. There was something that went down about 4 years ago with Jared Bayless and Jared Dudley to get the Bucks their first series win. That to me, it holds a lot of weight, but it's Kawhi. There's something to be said about it's Kawhi.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, this was orchestrated. It was almost choreographed that way.
Well,
and so there's beauty in our game, and that's a prime example of it.
Well, and John, you mentioned the four bounces around the rim. So Devin, it ranks at the top for me, Devin. There's been some good ones over the years. It ranks at the top. I was with my son, and we were watching it, and I looked at my son. Did you see that?
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's got this shocked look on my face. He goes, yeah, Dad, we need to rewind that and watch again. I'm like, yeah, we do.
And that was the thing. There's something about a clean buzzer beater.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, splash. But to see one that hits the rim, the side of the rim, but it was front iron. And to have that rotation on the ball where it did not look like it should have gone in.
Right.
But the rotation pulls it over the rim and it bounces around and you're like, is this really happening? It's one of those moments where time moved at a different speed than what it does any other time during the game.
Most of those baseline three-pointers will bounce on the rim and bounce over and off to the other side. You very rarely see it do what it did. And yeah, that had one heck of a spin on it to bounce back.
So I was just going to say, along the lines with this, let's jump to the next topic, which was, if you were watching the game, you saw Joel Embiid breaking down on the court, getting emotional, we'll put it that way, and then a Jazz fan tweets over to Rudy and says, hey, are you gonna go at Embiid for crying? And Rudy says, absolutely not. Rudy says only losers think crying is a sign of weakness, and goes on to say that it shows how much of a competitor and a winner you are.
Mic drop.
So what are your thoughts on this? Yep. I love that response. Chippy, I'll give this one to you first.
I think it's true. It's a great response. And especially a guy like, facing Embiid in the paint and knowing what a troll he is. I mean, I have major issues with Joel Embiid. I mean, he's a nobody. This is not a leader for our children. This is, Joel Embiid does not exemplify someone that I want my kids to look up to. I don't have kids, but I don't want, you know, my kids to look up to, because I don't think a lot of the things he does are prove that, you know, he's an example. But Rudy's absolutely right. That doesn't, you know, just because Joel Embiid's a total troll does not mean that he doesn't feel and experience emotions like the rest of us. And when your heart is in something and it breaks, well, it breaks. And I think it's healthy, you know, and I think it says a lot about the evolution of where our league has gone. I think that NBA Cares has come a long way with the mental health initiative. I think that that is paired with it really well. But absolutely, I think, you know, men cry, and we need more people to show us that, and you know, and the guys who are on the back of our jerseys, they can show our kids that, and they can, our game changes for the better, whether or not it's Joel Embiid or Vince Carter, you know, a stand-up guy like that. Emotions are emotions, and I think that we've really come a long way.
John?
I thought it was a perfect response, and I enjoyed it. Nothing like taking the higher ground.
I agree. I agree. I felt the same way. It's a mic drop, and I agree with everything JP said too. I absolutely agree.
Oh, absolutely. And how quick are people to forget the iconic photograph and video of Michael Jordan crying with his head against his championship trophy? I believe that was his first championship.
Yes, it was.
Why can you only be emotional in victory but not in defeat?
Right.
Where's the difference?
That's a good point.
Okay. Let's move on with this Golden State series. Steph going against Seth, the brotherly battle. I believe Seth said something along the lines of, they're not a better team without Kevin Durant, but they are harder to guard. They're moving a little faster. Do you guys see any truth to that? Does this series without Kevin Durant thus far, is that where Golden State's maybe finding some momentum and getting back to that Splash Brothers only quick pace play? Because they've lost some of their depth. Is that what the difference maker is the speed of play for them?
I think spacing too probably has something to do with it.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. Would you rather face them with or without KD?
John?
Well, the thing is, Durant has a lot of gravity and he has the ball in his hands a lot of times. And so without him, there's a lot more passing and a lot more free-form movement. But I would still rather face the Warriors without Durant than with.
Absolutely.
Yep. Same page here. And might I also point out that I think the best storyline of this entire series will be Steph versus Seth. That fourth quarter last night was so fun to watch the two of them go at each other and watch Seth get... Seth ended up with four steals. I think all four of them were on his brother.
Hey.
Let me ask you guys.
Seth was like a plus 13.
Yeah, right?
Sometimes I don't think I'm a John Birch Society girl, but maybe a bit of a conspiracy theorist. At first, when the injury happened to Kevin Durant and Reggie said, oh my gosh, you know, it's the Achilles. It's just like Boogie. They always say they feel like somebody kicked him in the back of the shin. At first, you know, people were kind of freaking out about that. But then I thought to myself, well, maybe it still could be his Achilles. They're just not revealing that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit far, you know, it's a bit far-fetched of an idea, but I mean, that could really hurt his bottom line, is, you know, a major, major injury. And so could there be any truth to the individual saying, well, maybe he is really more injured than he is, and they're just sort of, you know, pulling the carrot right in front of us.
That's an interesting thought.
I like that thought, but the truth had come out eventually on that, and then I think it would look as silly as the Jason Kidd spilling his water thing.
Okay, that's fair.
I think because if it's his Achilles, then that's going to kill his free agency. Then it's going to be like, well, when are you going to be able to play?
Well, and if it is...
Well, that's what I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Go for it. Sorry. No, you can go for it. Sorry.
I was just going to say, if it is his Achilles, that's career ending. I mean, Kobe came back but wasn't the same. Mehmet Okur really was never the same. Basketball, when that Achilles goes, or in any way, that's not good for your career at all.
Yeah, well, but the Jazz can happened, offer.
What were you saying, JP?
Boogie didn't have a lift to begin with. He comes back, and, you know, that guy is really flat-footed. But I just, you know, I think, oh, it was just the thought of maybe could there be some truth to this. And that's all there was.
And
I've wondered the same thing.
I think there could be truth that it's worse than they let on, yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. Maybe it's not an Achilles, but could this be a bigger deal? And they're just sort of, dragging it along, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, could be.
Let's jump to another topic real quick. We did touch on the lottery. We talked about the Knicks missing out on the first pick, Knicks having the third pick. Before the draft, they were reported to be interested in pursuing Anthony Davis. With that third pick, John, I want to ask you, do they have enough assets to make a push for Anthony Davis? I know that kind of the favorites here are the Lakers, who the Pelicans don't seem to want to deal with, and the Celtics. But would the Knicks have enough to offer, and would the Pelicans be interested in pairing Zion with RJ Barrett?
Knicks don't have enough for Davis. They don't have salaries they could really send back. So all they really have is young guys. So what would a package for Davis look like? I guess it would be Dennis Smith Jr. and Kevin Knox and three draft picks, Mitchell Robinson maybe. I mean, if they don't pick up Lance Thomas's option, their highest paid player next year is going to be Moutier at $5.7 million.
Yeah, but guys, Kevin, like, do you really think Kevin Knox is worth dealing right now? I mean, his ceiling is really high.
I think the Knicks are, it's all going to be free agency. I don't see the Knicks getting into the AD trade game.
Good.
I think they can get Kyrie and Durant.
Yeah, but I'm just saying through trade, like, but also you don't want to lose an asset like Kevin Knox. Mm-hmm. But
no,
also,
you don't.
What about the Celtics? You guys had mentioned the Celtics earlier, and I think Danny Ainge is sort of in a precarious position with what's gone on recently with Tatum and the fact that those guys, it's not unlike the situation in New Orleans where they just kind of feel like, this isn't a team. He's not fighting for us. There's not cohesion. And I think there was a lot of proof in that same mentality with the Celtics, just that they didn't gel, that they weren't, I think, who was it? Ainge? Was it Ainge who said, this is probably one of our most unlikable Celtics teams in the last 10 years?
Oh, wow.
You can't disagree with that, though.
Yeah.
You can't.
Well,
exactly.
Celtics locker room's going through something similar Lakers locker room went through with the trade deadline. It's just that they don't see that long-term loyalty from the front office. I mean, Rozier just blasted the Celtics. He's a restricted free agent. He's made it clear he doesn't want to be back. Kyrie Irving walked. I mean, don't you kind of have to bring back Rozier? Do they let him walk too? Then who's your point guard?
And that was actually my next hit.
The only long-term guys they have is Hayward and Marcus Smart.
That was Devin's next quick hit, actually.
Yeah, my next quick hit was the remarks from Terry Rozier, which he really went off on the organization. It sounds like there was kind of some turmoil there the whole time that, you know, what Kyrie and Gordon wanted is what Coach Stevens went with. And those were his guys. And
right.
It sounds like Kyrie could be on the way out. It seems like he certainly will be. Bill Simmons is floating ideas of trading Gordon Hayward for Anthony Davis if he can get them to do that. You know, and he's one of those assets. And Terry leaves. Well, one of the rumors that we saw this week is that Ricky Rubio wants to go to the Celtics or has interest in doing that. Do you think there's any truth to that, or are we just in that stage of early summer rumors that are kicking up and this is one of the first ones to hit?
I think we're in early summer rumors, but yeah, everyone's trying to position themselves for when the dominoes fall. Once Kyrie makes his decision to not return to the Celtics, they're going to want to turn around and try to find somebody, and they're going to want to find somebody who's a little more team-oriented, and Rubio is a wonderful teammate, and maybe that would be someone they would want to look at. Depends if they get Davis or not. That'll affect some things. I don't think New Orleans wants Hayward's salary back, but I think they're going to try to get Tatum, Brown, and then as many draft picks as they can.
I don't know how much longer Ainge lasts there anyway, and that could be anything from patience level with ownership down to health reasons. I mean, he just had a heart attack the other day, so I don't know how much longer he decides to stick it out.
I think it's up to Ainge.
I didn't mean to interrupt, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just said I think it's up to Ainge. I don't think he's going to get fired or anything. I just think it's up to Ainge and his health, but I think he has proven overall that he's good at his job. Now, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I totally agree with that. I think I call him Ainge God sometimes. I mean, aside from this year and just how this team sort of wasn't at all cohesive, Danny Ainge is a master at putting things together in sort of a silent but strong arm sort of way. I really, really respect him. And an organization is not going to fire Danny Ainge. That organization is not going to get rid of Danny Ainge. It's going to be Danny Ainge's time to say, I'm hanging it up. Do you guys think he's either going to hang it up and just be done, or could you see him move? You know, I don't know, but I think he sticks it out with the Celtics a little bit longer, maybe in a decreased capacity, but I don't see him leaving this team. I see him kind of wanting to right the ship that this year has been maybe a bit of a pock on his resume there.
Right. And I do think that when he hangs it up, I think it's permanent. I think it's because he's ready to retire and live out the remainder of his days in sweet retirement. That's my opinion on that one.
In Oregon, I think he'll go into Jerry West mode.
Yeah, Jerry West.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, you know, that's fair.
Just go to different offices and advise.
he'll go Hollywood. Yeah, okay, Danny Ainge goes Hollywood. I don't know if I see it.
No, it's just interesting to think about the Celtics. It seems like a year or two ago we were talking about how many assets they had, all these great young players, and seeing what they do this offseason. You know, if Kyrie walks, if Rozier gets a big payday and they don't want to match for a guy who doesn't want to be there, you know, if they make a trade and they trade some of these young guys away, where will the Celtics be? It may not be as prime of a position as we thought, and that makes the East rather interesting going forward.
Yeah,
especially for, you know, a team like the Bucks or the Raptors, or you know, the Sixers are in flux too. We'll see where they end up. So
yeah,
and lost in all of this, I feel bad for Jason.
If there's a draft day trade,
right? Right. No, so, well, yeah, and I was going to say, John, and you know, I agree on the draft day trade idea because I think there's going to be a few, but lost in all of this is Jason Tatum, because Tatum is a young talent who's shown that he's really good, and I feel like all of these side shows with Kyrie and everything else, lost in that is the development, the blossoming of a future star in this league.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because there were some hard feelings the last time a guy left the Jazz and went to the Celtics. If this does happen and there's any truth to this and Rubio ends up with the Celtics, does that change your opinion of Ricky at all?
No.
No.
Okay. I just
it's a different situation.
Yeah. And
it's a different situation.
And that's the way I see it. But you see the reactions from people on social media who are almost upset. Oh, he wants to go play for the Celtics. It's like, you know what? If he's honest about it and he goes and it's not like we're waiting on him to sign someone else, fine.
Right.
I don't have any problem with it. I wish
but I don't
Ricky
think
the best.
Fans are as enamored with Rubio as they were Hayward. You know, I he's not the same caliber of a player.
Right.
Maybe this year didn't you know prove that for Hayward. But yeah, I mean we weren't in the he wasn't an all star for us. You know what I mean?
Right.
Hayward meant more to the organization, and we could have seen a much bigger. You know, we drafted him. There was a much bigger future there.
Agreed.
Right. Right. I think with Ricky, he's been a much more polarizing figure in Jazz fan land than Hayward ever was. Everyone loved Hayward, but there seems to be a mix of emotions surrounding Ricky. So
agreed.
We'll see what happens.
Is that
that's all I got for quick hits. So let's call it there.
So we'll stop at quick hits. We'll move to pop culture. John, what you want to discuss on pop culture this week?
The movie I saw this week was Long Shot. It is with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, where she is the Secretary of State and he is a reporter, and they happen to know each other because she used to babysit him, and they wind up dating. And so it's all about this, you know, schlubby, nerdy guy dating suddenly one of the most powerful women in America. And she's also looking at possibly even running for president when she finds out the president's decided that he's not going to run for a second term. So it's got that kind of concept behind it. There is a lot of political satire to it. It really makes fun of Fox and Friends in a funny way. But you kind of have to like Seth Rogen's humor in order to like the movie. But if you do, the movie's well done. It's pretty funny. Charlize Theron is pretty funny. There's a scene where she's high on Molly and has to pretend to be sober for an important international call that was pretty dang funny. Overall, I thought it was a cute movie, decent romantic comedy with, you know, a lot of swearing and drug jokes, and so I liked it overall.
See, movies like that, I have to figure out what Seth Rogen is doing, because it seems like every movie he is dating way, way, way up from where he should be.
It is a genre. It is the Seth Rogen dates someone much hotter than him genre. And at least in those movies, they acknowledge it every time. It's not like Woody Allen where it's just absolutely disgusting. But yeah, it's always like he does it. But then everyone else in the movie is like, why is she with you?
Because you got Charlize Theron. You've had Katherine Heigl. I'm trying to think of who was in Zach and Mary with him. You know, it's just his thing. And he's
Elizabeth
good at
Banks.
It.
Elizabeth, yeah, there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, yeah. You see what I'm saying here?
Yep, it's a genre.
All right, so Long Shot. Go see it. It's definitely looked entertaining to me. I definitely would agree. It looks very good. Wanted to ask, JP, have you seen Endgame?
Have I?
Yes.
I'm not a movie person. I'm not even a TV person.
Okay.
Aside from... So, you know, I can't help too much with pop culture. Sorry, guys. It's all basketball for me.
All right. Fair enough. Well, then, John, do you want to talk Endgame real fast? I mean, do we have some time to go into it or no?
I'm fine.
All right. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. I guess it's okay for us to finally talk about it. It's been 3 weeks. Why don't you start? What did you think?
So Devin rolls his eyes. He's taking the headphones off because it's going to spoil him. Hey, the spoiler embargo is over, Devin. You're going to have to deal with it.
No, it's not over. You can talk about it without dropping spoilers. Some of us are busy lately.
All right. So John, I loved it. In fact, I loved the pace of the movie. For as long a movie as it was, the one thing I was very, very impressed by was the pace. They handled it extremely well, you know, and look no further than Batman versus Superman, where I thought pacing was horrible and off in that one. This was the complete opposite. The pacing was great. Thanos, for a villain, was endeared to me, both between Infinity War and now. I really dig him. I like him a lot. But there's a lot to take in with the film. They took time travel to a completely different level. It's like Marvel says, here's what you all believe about time travel. Say goodbye to it. We're throwing it out the window because that doesn't exist in this universe. And I was like, whoa, because nothing's greater than the quote in the movie about Back to the Future, which just made me laugh. But overall, it was really good. It's easily my favorite Avengers film, but also one of my top Marvel films.
Yeah, I thought Endgame was a very satisfying conclusion. It felt like a series finale to this 21 movie TV show we've been watching called the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I know they're going to keep going and everything, but this really felt final in many ways. I thought they balanced all the talent really well. Since they had killed off half the cast at the end of the last movie, they were able to give time to those that didn't get to play. I really liked what they did with Hawkeye. I really liked what they did with Ant-Man. I liked a lot of the CGI play and making some characters younger as they're going back through time. And, you know, I watched Infinity War. I wound up watching it three times, and the third time around, I was like, okay, I'm kind of done with this. Because Infinity War was just a series of, okay, Thanos needs these six stones, and the entire movie is people failing to stop him from getting each stone,
right,
each different set piece. And so Endgame is like, all right, how are you going to undo all that? And I thought it was really bouncy in the way it would jump around. The character play was a lot of fun. The final battle was pretty cool. It had a lot of iconic moments. Some characters were better served than others. I was really surprised that Captain Marvel wound up not really being much.
Yeah, me too. I was expecting more of her.
Whatever. It's a cast of 300 people. There were some cameos in Endgame. There were some people who showed up that I was not thinking were going to show up. And I loved that. I loved just suddenly seeing someone from, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier that I just didn't think we were going to see again, and all these other different characters. So
right.
That whole thing was cool.
No,
I just left feeling very emotionally satisfied.
Yeah, I agree. And it was interesting to me, too. I really, you talked about how they did some service to some and then maybe others not so much. I really enjoyed the story arc, the put of the bow on it, if you will, for Tony Stark, Iron Man, and for Captain America. I actually really enjoyed the way they kind of finished out both of their story arcs and the way that they did. In fact, Tony Stark in this film endeared me, really, more so than I think any of the other films he was in. He was a much more real, believable character to me. I don't know if that makes any sense, but to me, this film allowed me to feel a little bit more, okay, Tony Stark's real. This is legit. This guy's got it, right? And I really appreciated what they did with it. So, and yeah, the way they ended it, the final battle, everything about that. Plus, this opens up the door to other timelines. You don't have to continue. You can do all sorts of things. And with the Disney Plus app, they can start new series, right? They can start new things, and they can bring about new movies in the future that might tackle different storylines, timelines, alternate universes, without ruining anything.
Yep. Yeah.
I made a tweet the other day and said, I've never seen an Avengers movie, but I watch Extraordinary Humans every night. Hashtag NBA playoffs. And I think that's about the closest I could get to that conversation. Sorry, guys.
No, I like that. I do. But so I'm going to put you on the spot, though, because I told you about what I was going to ask you. Although you don't watch many movies or TVs, I still got to believe that you have a favorite all-time movie or TV show, right? Do you?
Yep, I do. I do want both, or you just want my favorite movie or my favorite TV show?
Give them both. We always love our guests to give both because we like to talk about it. We like it. Let's hear it.
My favorite movie of all time is Problem Child 2.
Problem Child 2. I don't think I've seen that one. John?
John Ritter. Why?
And to which I say, why is a crooked letter, but why not? It's my movie. It's my movie. It's my everything. It's, I was You know, I thought I was going to marry Junior when I was a kid, the little redheaded demon child. I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't watch a lot of movies, but that movie just brings a sense of home to me. And I know, and you guys are like, yeah, cinematic classic, sure.
Well, no.
But I'm really comfortable. I'm comfortable with my favorite movie. I can handle it.
Well, I'm
my favorite TV show. What's that?
I was going to say, I'm intrigued. I know nothing about the film. I'm going to have to go look now. But this is why we ask when we have guests on, because I like hearing about films that maybe I don't know anything about. I think this is cool.
I mean, I don't know. I think I'd watch it first before I'd let your kids watch it, because I don't know if it's, you know, the greatest life lessons. But it makes me smile. Oh, it makes me smile. And I can say that movie, I can, inside and out, I know it all. In it, the problem child one, so I'd watch them both. My favorite show of all time is a show from Comedy Central. It actually has Stephen Colbert in it, called Strangers with Candy.
Oh yeah, that's a good show.
A little off the beaten track again, but yeah, I wouldn't call myself conventional, so.
No, that's okay. Unconventional, if you will, is, there's nothing wrong with that, so. And like I said, I consider myself, you know, I enjoy movies and TV series, but I haven't seen everything. So I love hearing what other people have watched and enjoy. So, and John's more well-versed in this area than I am too. So when you mention both of those shows, I think he knows both of those, the movie and the TV series, TV show. I don't know either one, but I'd have to check them both out.
I'd say best of luck to you. they make me happy, but I don't think especially Brown Child 2, I don't think it's winning any awards. But it wins an award in my heart.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
No, I can understand some kind of emotional attachment. Maybe there are other things going on in your life that latched onto. I mean, I didn't. That one was in and out of my memory quickly. But you know, good on you. And you know, I do miss John Ritter. I think, boy, did he die way too soon.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Absolutely, he was a gem.
Yes, he was. I loved Ritter, and. I'm glad you bring him up too, because speaking of other movies, the original It TV movie was so good.
Yep.
It was so good.
Mm, yeah.
That was Ritter.
So.
Wasn't that, which one was Harry Anderson? Harry Anderson was the movie though, right?
Yeah, Harry Anderson and John Ritter were in It. They're both gone.
Yeah.
Wasn't
played young Bill. Harry he died.
Wasn't
recently,
yeah? Harry Anderson was just last year.
Wasn't Tim Curry the clown?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've seen that. So, well, that's great. All right, that pop culture. We have anything else to talk about? I don't think we do. So
I've got one.
Oh, do you have one, Devin?
Yeah, and it's not gonna be what I've watched. I'm gonna tell you right now. I didn't watch Endgame because I've been trying to get caught up on Game of Thrones.
Oh, by the way, did you appreciate the fact that we avoided spoilers for you? Are you okay there?
I ignored you guys. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
I tuned
okay.
you out.
Great.
So here's my quick hit, or I guess it's not a quick hit. Here's my pop culture question for you guys. There's a new Batman coming to town. Mm-hmm. And I want your take on the selection of the Batman. Do you guys see who it is?
I don't think
Batman. I saw it.
Who is it?
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, Robert Pattinson.
The kid from Twilight.
Guy from Twilight. He's proven since the Twilight movies that he's actually a pretty decent actor. There is a movie called Good Time where he's playing this hustler crook guy, really self-centered guy that was really good. Lost City of Z, the movie was okay, but I was really impressed by his acting in it. I don't think it's a bad casting choice, honestly. I'd give him a chance.
And that's what I thought, because I looked at it, and just like the picture of him, and his appearance and kind of his demeanor, he seems like someone who would actually, in my opinion, make a really good Bruce Wayne.
Like
the idea of him as yeah. Batman is a little bit weird at first, but if you think of him as Bruce Wayne before Batman.
Maybe. But see,
Bale's going to have to.
Do you think what?
Bale's going to have to give some bodybuilding tips. Bale is going to have to be yeah. elder Bruce. Yeah. But
hey.
I do love Bale, so
look.
I'm in on this talk. But I think there's been a lot of talk about that Joaquin Phoenix Joker trailer.
Oh,
Joker.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, yes. We've talked about it on here. Yes, we have. So,
I hadn't even thought of that, but now I'm picturing that. Yeah, Robert Pattinson's Batman going up against Joaquin Phoenix's Joker eventually.
That could be interesting.
Right.
That needs to happen. Yeah.
I just want to say something. Cool. Slender guys can be superheroes too, okay?
Okay. Oh, I see why you brought this up, Devin. I get it now.
He doesn't need a bodybuilder. He's a millionaire. He can find other ways.
Need editor.
Well, like I was going to say, the bar was set high for me back in the day. John and I, John, I don't know if you feel this way, but to me, Christopher Reeve will always be Superman, the Superman. And to me, uh-huh. Michael yeah. Keaton will always be the Batman.
I'm with you on Reeve, and Keaton was great, but I think Bale actually rivals Keaton for who the best Batman is.
Quit nodding your head, Devin, because I know you feel the same way, but I know
Bale was incredible.
No, see, 89, I was 15 years old, and it was all about Christopher Reeve and Batman, and that was my show. So, and Jack Nicholson is Joker. Sorry, that was the Batman for me.
And I was so glad they didn't go with their initial idea. They were going to make it a comedy with Bill Murray as Batman and Steve Martin as Joker and do it just like the 60s show.
Oh, heaven forbid.
When they got Burton involved, they said, let's actually try to do this a little more serious.
Yeah.
Which was exactly what...
Yeah, and then they cast Clooney a few years later, and you know how that went.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then they gave it to Schumacher, and Schumacher said, hey, it's time to be campy again. Let's put bat nipples on the suit, and let's have everything be neon. Yeah.
Well... And I'll also say that I'm an outlier on this one, but Batman Forever with Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey, I enjoyed that one a lot too. So I might be an outlier, but that's okay.
I'm not gonna lie. I think bat nipples is a good note to end this show on.
All right, fine. We can end it on that. All right. Thank you all for joining us for yet another episode of Jedi and Germs. This is episode 191, if you're keeping count, and we have been at it a while. 5 years, almost 5 years, I think. John, is that right? 5 years? Something like that?
Four and a half
years. Yeah, Four and a half years.
The Summer League table.
Yeah.
Guys, the Summer League media table.
Yeah, exactly. Get us a table. Set us up. Let's get it there. JP, we love having you on. I am so glad that you reached out and that we talked this week about this, and I'm glad that we had you on because this has been fantastic discussion, and it's been wonderful having you.
Hey, it's been great just talking with you guys. Keep listening to this show. I think that's the importance that you guys really have a camaraderie about you, that it doesn't just happen. It's something that grows, and it really shows.
Well, we appreciate the kind words, and yes, it's been fun. It has been a lot of fun. John and Devin, we've been along since day one, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So once again, thank you all for joining us. Please go out to iTunes, to wherever you listen. If there's a place to leave a review for us. Join our conversation on Twitter. Followed the Jedi and Germs account, the unpaid intern that runs that account. Great discussion, great stats that are thrown out all the time. Facebook Jedi and Germs. We'll look forward to you real soon on our next episode. Thank you all. Talk to you soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.
Fear of the Deer.